Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for Closing the Wealth Gap. The one show, maybe the only show that shows you how to close the wealth gap in your own life. With the man who's done it for many, our wealth coach himself, Tyrone French. Hey, Tyrone.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Closing the Wealth Gap. I'm your host, Tyrone French. Before we get started, what I'd like for you guys to do is go to my website. It's TyroneFrench.com. TyroneFrench.com. Download my free app. All you have to do is tap the button that says free app. Once you do that, you're going to go to another link, and it's actually going to give you access to my free app. The reason I say that is because there are calculators, articles, and videos that will help you to close the wealth gap for yourself and for generations to come. Again, go to TyroneFrench.com. And with that said, we're going to get started. Without further ado, I have a very special guest in the studio today, Mr. Troy Small. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Tyrone. How are you today?
Good, good. Now, you were a Marine Corps. You were a Marine in the Marine Corps. Matter of fact, a drill instructor.
Absolutely. Yes, I was.
What enticed you to join the Marine Corps?
Well, as a young man, I didn't really know what I wanted to do at the time. I come from a rough, small city in St. Louis, Missouri, a city called Kinloch, Missouri.
Okay.
And
shout out to Kinloch, Missouri.
Shout out to Kinloch for sure. At the time, you know, when I was in high school, you know, as a junior and senior, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I did not want to continue with school. I didn't want to go to college.
Yeah.
So that was something I did not want to do. And so the Marine Corps was something that always interests me and intrigued me, actually since a little boy.
Okay.
And so that was something that I guess went back to as a teenager, and I decided to make that decision actually when I was a junior.
Okay.
Actually about 6 or 7 months prior to my ship date, I actually signed up in October of 88.
Okay.
And I shipped to boot camp in July of 89.
Okay. And evidently it stuck because you decided to make a career out of it.
I did.
And you became a drill instructor. Explain that to me in that process. Because a lot of people see DIs or drill instructors, and they don't know what it takes to become a drill instructor. But that's almost special forces type mentality training that you got to go through in order to do that.
Absolutely. As a young Marine, my overall Marine Corps goal was to be a drill instructor. That was my goal.
Okay.
If I can make it and be a drill instructor, then I was happy. I didn't really need anything else. When I first went in the Marine Corps, I did not plan to serve for 20 years. Really, I just was going to join and figure it out after I joined.
Right.
But once I got in, I was an infantryman, and so which is the closest you can get to boot camp or recruit training is if you are in the infantry company or infantry battalion, because that it behaves like boot camp.
Right.
And so I think that's what gave me my initial drive to want to be a drill instructor. And from about 2 or 3 years in, that was my goal. And so I had always had that intention. As time went on, my goal was to be a hat, as we say.
Yes.
And I eventually...
Smokey the Bear.
Yeah, Smokey the Bear. Yeah. I eventually became a drill instructor in 2000. I went to DI school. So basically from 2000 to 2003, I was a hat. And you know, I wanted to do it. I mean, I don't know. I felt like I was a hardcore young man. You know, I'm short. I was 5'8" in the Marine Corps, but I'm more like about 5'7" than that. So, but us short people, we kind of have chips on our shoulder, and for different reasons, you know, because I don't know, people like to pick on us, I guess. But as a young man, you know, as a little boy and as a young man, you deal with that. Actually,
yes.
I mean, you do deal with the fact that maybe you're not tall or whatever. You do get picked on a little bit, or there's things that happen. But that aside, really, it was about giving back.
Yes.
You know, being a drill instructor, as a hat, you work as hard as the recruits.
Yes.
I mean, the drill instructor is there pretty much every day with the recruits,
yes.
training.
Yes.
So it is a very intensive and difficult job to do. But it is very satisfying, particularly at the end of recruit training when the recruits graduate and you meet their family and their parents.
Yes.
And all of their friends, family, and they're all happy and excited for that new young Marine.
Yes.
It's an excellent and outstanding feeling.
Well, let me ask you a question. Out of all your years of being a DI, drill instructor, was there one recruit that stands out?
There is. there's one recruit that stands out, and there's an interesting story behind this, and that was Recruit Bush.
Okay.
Brian Bush, he was what I would term my worst recruit over my entire career. Obviously, I've had a lot of bad recruits, but he was the most memorable recruit.
Because I'm trying to get the Guma Powell.
Well, you know, he came to boot camp with his own personal challenges, so he was seeking,
which many of them, those young men
path.
Did.
Exactly, yes. As we all are, right? Yes. We're, you know, many of us go to boot camp to find our path in life.
Yes.
You go to recruit training.
Same here.
No matter what the service is.
Same here.
Marine Corps or any of the other services. And I think that was the same case with Brian. As a matter of fact, I know that's the case because today Brian and I are friends. Brian actually has a nonprofit now called the Reboot Project, where he helps veterans and first responders who, you know, may be challenged in life, to help them get on their feet, help them get re-motivated, and help them to conquer their mountains in their own
lives. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Now, yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've seen a lot of the world.
Yes,
and
sir.
You've actually participated in a lot of these operations. What I want people to understand is not that you're a Marine. You know, once a Marine, always a Marine. But share some of the your background as far as where you served.
Yeah, I mean, I've quite a few places, maybe not as many as some, but I was just kind of lying it out. When I first joined the Marine Corps, I trained here in San Diego for recruit training. My first duty station was Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii.
Okay.
While in Hawaii, we went on a lot of deployments. I went to Okinawa, Japan twice. While on one of those deployments, I deployed up to mainland Japan to Camp Fuji, Japan, and did some training up there. I've been to South Korea for training. I've been to two combat tours. I did two combat tours. I was in Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Okay.
So I've been to Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. Also, I did Operation Iraqi Freedom. I was stationed in Camp Fallujah for 13 months from 2008 to 2009.
Okay.
So I was in Fallujah in Iraq and, you know, many of the austere environments during the war. And many other places around the world as well. I mean, throughout the United States. And I was fortunate enough in the early 90s to go on a trip to West Africa.
Okay.
I was working under the Marine Security Guard Battalion for the headquarters battalion for Marine Security Guard Battalion out of Quantico, Virginia. And at the time, what happened was I won the Marine Board for basically the I won a board for the headquarters battalion, like a meritorious board or just a Marine of the Quarter board, actually is what it was. So I was the Marine of the Quarter for that particular time for headquarters battalion. And so because of that, I was able to go on a detachment visit with the executive officer and the S4 officer, which was awesome. I was a sergeant at the time. And so I got a chance to go to Dakar, Senegal, Conakry, New Guinea. And
now explain S4.
Yeah.
Explain S4.
S4 is that is a logistics office for the Marine Corps. Essentially, that is supply, logistics, preservation, and packing. Anything that has to do with logistics is falls under S4.
Right. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because of what you do right now, as far as contracts and government contracts. What, and that's, as a matter of fact, it's a perfect segue. What got you into government contracts and being able to help veterans, so people on active duty military, but also veterans, to be able to establish their own government contracts?
Yeah, I have an interesting start. I was a machine gunner when I first went into the Marine Corps. So the first 4 years, I shot the 50 caliber machine gun, the Mark 19 machine gun, and all of the lesser guns as well, the M60, the M249 SAW, and all of the other weapons as well.
Now, so, Mark 19, that's a grenade launcher.
That is a grenade launcher.
Man, love
that
it.
Is an excellent
love
weapon.
Love it. Woo!
Yes, it is. Did you know that you can fire the grenade launcher as and use it as artillery?
Yes.
You can do indirect fire with the Mark 19 grenade launcher. But that's a whole nother podcast.
I got goosebumps. I got hair standing up behind my neck. But yeah, that's a whole nother category, a whole nother story.
Another story, right? So after Desert Shield, Desert Storm, as what often happens after major wars and conflicts, the Marine Corps started doing drawbacks or cutbacks.
Right. Yes.
So they started cutting the force. And so I was faced with the decision of, hey, Marine, you either need to get out because we don't really need you anymore in the infantry, or you can change jobs to a supply job.
Okay.
They gave me three options. I chose supply administration.
Okay.
So I did supply for 1 year. While as a supply admin clerk, I learned about contracting. And that's when I knew, oh, purchasing and contracting, what's that? Oh, well, purchasing and contracting is a form of logistics.
Right.
It is a form of supply. Essentially, right. whatever you cannot purchase in the government system, the government has to go out and open purchase it. That's yes. where you. That's where purchasing and contracting comes yes. in.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that one of the number one suppliers of contracts and one of the ways that you can actually get rich is by getting a government contract with the U.S. doing business with the U.S. United States government.
Absolutely. It is definitely a path for most any small business owner. It just really depends on what you sell and also what a particular government agency is looking for. But government contracting is an excellent option to increase a company's revenue,
right.
to provide them with additional revenue paths, revenue streams. As I'm sure we'll probably talk about a little later, because we're both veterans, and that's kind of the purpose of this part of it, at least, is there's some opportunities for military veterans who happen to also be small business owners.
Well, I tell you what, let's talk about that right now.
Sure.
Let's table everything else. We're going to talk about the opportunities for veterans to gain access to military contracts. What is that process? What does it look like?
Yeah, so for veterans to gain access to military contracts, the process looks like, well, first, the veteran has to have a business.
Yes.
So they can be a sole proprietor, though. They don't have to have a like an LLC or an S-Corp.
Yes.
They can just be a business in and of themselves.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is they need to be an organization. And if they want to do business with the federal government, you must be registered in the System for Award Management.
Okay.
That is SAM.gov.
Okay.
If you're not registered in SAM.gov, thou may not get a contract. You cannot. You have to be.
So that's the first step.
It's a prerequisite.
Get registered with SAM.gov.
Absolutely. Okay. That is at the very least that you get. You have to do that, and everything else comes after that. Now, registering in SAM is not a government strategy. It's not, hey, I'm in SAM, now bring me all the contracts.
Yes.
It is just the first step of readiness.
Okay.
There are several steps to be ready.
Okay.
But to the point, if you're registered in SAM, that's you're on your path to being able to win a government contract, at least at the federal level.
Okay. Now let's talk about, once you've registered, let's talk about certification. How do you get your small business, even if you're a sole proprietor, how do you get that small business certified?
So at the federal level, there is no specific small business cert for okay. federal government contracting. There is a small business certification for California-based small businesses.
Got it.
Okay. So if you are a California-based small business, which is our primary audience here, right?
Yes.
So for all of us California businesses, you can apply for your small business certification as long as you meet the qualifications via Cal E-Procure, which is a website. That website is managed by the Department of General Services, DGS.
Okay.
And so if you apply on Cal E-Procure, then a small business owner may become certified as a certified California small business. At the federal level, small businesses self-certify, meaning when you register in SAM, you are validating or stating at that time if you are a small business or not, and it is based on your NAICS code. Your North
right.
American Industry Classification System code.
Okay.
That's what determines if you are a large or a small business per opportunity. At the federal level, one NAICS code is issued for each opportunity, and that NAICS code is what's going to determine if a company is large or small for that opportunity.
Okay. And you can literally find those NAICS codes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics? Or do they define what those codes are?
I will answer the question like this. The best way to find your NAICS codes is through the USCensus.gov website.
Okay,
the census.gov website is the best resource for NAICS codes. There's other places,
yes,
but the census.gov is the best place to go. It's the most efficient site. Some folks may be aware that there's a NAICS.com website, which does talk about NAICS codes. However, the census.gov site is much more efficient and gives you better results.
Okay. And for those of you that are just tuning in, we're having a conversation with Troy Small, and he is basically an independent contractor. His company is Copper Water Consulting. And you know, he's going to break down some of the avenues as far as if you ever thought about getting a government contract. We need you to listen to this podcast and probably listen to it a couple of times. And at the end of this conversation, we're going to give you an opportunity where you can actually reach out to Troy directly. Now, given that based on we're in California and knowing that you can get get certified through California or get a government contract, I would be more inclined to focus on a U.S. government contract. For one, because a lot of times, what, they're larger?
Are you referring to the federal government?
The federal government,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Well, generally speaking, federal contracts are larger. Both, like when we compare federal government contracting to California state contracting, they both have their pros and cons.
Okay.
Obviously, they both offer contracts, so that's a plus all the way around. Like yes. you can win a contract, you can win a contract. That's just a good thing. But there are some challenges. So for some organizations, the federal government may work best.
Okay.
Now, I do caution California-based businesses, and most of my dialogue is based on California businesses because that's where we are. And, you know, everyone else can think the opposite of what I say for Cali or think about it for their state. But when you're, as a California-based business, you or any small business in our area, you might be challenged with a federal contract, and here's why. I'm not saying don't go for it, but I'm gonna tell you why there might be a challenge.
Okay.
If you provide a service, and you know, if the government has a contract in Missouri, are you gonna travel to Missouri to do that service, or are you looking for services in your location?
Understood.
So if you're looking, like if you say, well, I really only want to do something around the house, or, you know, let's just say Southern Cal.
Right.
Okay, well, that eliminates the whole country for federal contracting almost. You're eliminating every state, you know, all 49 states except for California. So essentially when you go on SAM.gov, you're looking for work in the state of California. That is really restricting the potential opportunities the federal level, right?
Yes.
But if you are that's if you provide services like lawn care or janitorial, okay. Right? You're not going to travel to another state to do janitorial services.
Right.
It's not cost efficient. But if you sell supplies or products,
yes,
you could do business anywhere because you're not traveling there. You're shipping your products to where the government wants them. So in that case, federal contracting is not as a challenge as it would be for a service-based company, as an example,
okay,
that is hands-on in the location. One more thing I want to say now, I want to compare that to like an organization like mine. I provide consulting.
Okay.
I am a service-based company, but I can do my consulting anywhere.
Anywhere.
So for an organization like mine who provides intangible services, not something you can touch, like I make up my consulting projects. People bring projects to me to support, so I support them virtually.
Yes.
In that regard, you can do business pretty much anywhere.
Okay. You know, you got a lot of disabled veterans, 100% permanent total, and they're living outside of the country. Can they still access these government contracts while they're living outside the country?
Well, that's going to be a challenge. Most of the well, let me specifically answer your question. You can access contracts anywhere.
Okay.
The challenge a part of the question, you didn't ask this or say this specifically, but the challenge is that if that veteran wants to have a certification, mm-hmm. which we didn't talk about, right, at the federal level, you have the Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Small Business Certification. You also have the Veteran-Owned Small Business Certification for the federal government.
Yes.
For the state of California, you have the Disabled Veteran Business Enterprise Certification.
Okay.
Now, these certs, generally speaking, require that the owners are they need to be based in the United States.
Okay.
And the principal office
okay.
needs to either be in the state or in the United States. So if they're overseas, there may be a challenge there.
But you said the principal office has to be in the United States. So let's say if you're domiciled, your business is domiciled in California. Mm-hmm. You live in Thailand mm-hmm. and you have a subcontractor to do that work. And that's a lot of steps. But is that possible?
Yes, that's possible. But what is not possible is that veteran may not be, he or she cannot be a certified disabled veteran business enterprise.
Got it.
Or okay. a certified small business, because they are not domiciled in the state. They're okay. domiciled outside the state.
Outside. And that's what I was getting to, because again, a lot of times veterans, you know, they, you know, to have your because you're a disabled veteran and you can literally have a designation for being a disabled veteran that will actually, I guess, how does that work as far as the government looking at that classification and being able to offer you a contract?
Well, in order for them to, well, first off, you have to be that. You have to have the certification.
Right.
And well, let's talk about it at the federal level.
Okay.
And you know, I try to keep these distinguished because it can get kind of confusing fast if we're not careful. But I do want to say this as well for those that are listening. Latch on to what you can when we're talking about contracting.
Yes.
It will come full circle.
Okay.
Meaning, if you're talking about the end of a contract, at some point you're going to talk about the beginning of a contract, or you're going to talk about contract execution.
Okay.
If you're working a contract right now that's going to be expiring soon, you're going to be talking about sunsetting the contract and what do we need to do to redo the contract. So it's a cycle.
Okay.
But with that said, at the federal government level, the Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Small Business Cert and the Veteran-Owned Small Business Cert. So a contracting officer or a buyer can award a direct contract to a certified SDVOSB or VOSB at the federal level. They can also do set-asides as well, meaning they can set aside an opportunity only for certified service-disabled veterans, or they can set aside an opportunity only for certified veteran-owned small businesses. That would be at the federal level. At the state level, the state of California can also give a direct contract to a disabled veteran business enterprise.
Okay.
This is a DVBE. Now, the state of California does not recognize only veterans. Their program is for disabled veterans.
Okay.
And you must be at a minimum of 10% disabled in order to get that cert. So if you're only 5% disabled, you don't qualify.
And that's why I mentioned as far as being 100% mm-hmm. permanent and total. Just like certain educational benefits with VR&E, you have to have a percentage of disability in order to actually receive those benefits, which is about 10%. But
right, yeah, and yes, in that case, that is exactly the 100% total and permanent disability does not come into play as much in government contracting. It does come into play when that veteran that is 100% permanently and totally disabled, if they are not able to run the business themselves because of their disabilities, that individual may have their caretaker or another individual run their business for them because they can't due to their disability.
Well, a lot of times you could be 100% permanent and total, but that does not preclude you from or stop you or prohibit you from actually working. That's a designation or a category. You're in a category, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you've lost an arm or a leg or things like that. It's just you're in that rating category of 100% permanent and total. But like, you can literally do remote work or physically do the work. It's just a designation and a category that the VA has based on you qualifying with the disabilities that you acquired while you were on active duty, and that got worse when you got out of the military.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And I know plenty of veterans that are 100% service disabled, but they are functioning civilians.
Yes,
they deal with their challenges, and they're going through their stuff, but they're living life.
Yes.
Beside, you know, irregardless of their disability, they're
yes.
still living life.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Now, as it applies to veterans, though, when do you think a veteran should begin to do their due diligence or research to start the government contract process?
You know, honestly, I would say prior to becoming a veteran.
Okay.
And this is something that you and I had discussed a year or two ago, and, you know, The truth is there, but you brought it to light to me, and this is your statement. I'm using, like, the military creates veterans.
Yes.
Like Tyrone French told me that. So, exactly. So the military is actually creates the veterans. And so, because you're not a veteran until you're separated.
Yes.
So my answer would be, if you know that you want to be a small business owner, start before you separate from service, because you're going to be able to get a lot of insight prior to. I have a handful of clients that I've worked with that they were still in the military.
Yes.
And they made astounding gains on their business startup prior to their separation. So when they separate, they can hit the ground running.
Yes.
And be much more farther along on the startup path.
Yes.
Than if they just get out and start asking questions, because you have that security blanket while you're still in.
Absolutely.
So you want to take advantage of that, because once you get out, no one cares.
Right.
Don't nobody care.
Yeah.
When you get out, unfortunately, like, no one's checking on you. But right. When you're in, generally speaking, they are checking on you.
I am so glad you brought that up. Even with do they necessarily have to have a background? I know the answer to this question, but do they necessarily have to have a background in procurement in order to start applying for those government contracts?
No. You don't even have to have a business background. I have clients that have no clue.
Like, say that again, brother.
You don't even know what the heck you're doing.
Right.
You find people like you and I.
Yeah.
You find people like me to show you the way, to show you the path.
Exactly.
Like, because if you have something, then there's a way.
Yeah.
Right. You just got to figure out how to make a way for the thing it is that you have.
I don't know if you've had this same experience, but I just find a lot of people that's on active duty, they don't know what they don't know, and nobody's telling them. And it's like I heard this story about when this it was a transatlantic travel, and the pilot and the co-pilot land, and they did an interview, and it was like, you know, how was the trip? And they said, well, it was cold and everything. He said, but it would have been nice. They got hungry halfway through the trip, and it would have been nice if they had something to eat. And lo and behold, one of the plane captains went to the plane and pulled up a compartment, opened up a compartment, and they had a large contingent of sandwiches right there under their seat, but they didn't know about it. And that's how I equate a lot of military people, because, again, the benefits and all of these resources are right there under their feet, but they just don't know about it. And I'm like, why wait until you're 5 years, 10 years, 15 years out of the military to start educating yourself about these benefits? Because at that point, you've like wasted, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars in resources that you could have been acquiring and dispersing through your family and your community. But because you just didn't know, you didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah. And you're leaving, you know, not only you're wasting money, you're leaving money on the table.
Yes.
You know, and this happened to me. You know, this is why I'm thankful for you for doing your podcast and doing episodes particularly like this, is educating veterans and military folks. You know, I served for 20 years. No one talked to me before I got out about my disability.
Right.
I should have started that before I got out. I didn't.
Hmm.
So I end up hurting myself, like, in different ways. And when I see some military folks getting out now, folks who I'm consulting, they're going through the process 6, 8, 9, 10 months before they get out, which is good.
Yes.
They're getting their disability yes. taken care of. So they almost know their rating before they even separate.
Yes. Yes.
That's how it should be.
That's how it should be.
I wasn't like that.
Same
I
here.
Separated, went on my way, and I didn't start a business till many years later. And even many years later, I went and applied for disability or a few years later after getting out.
Yes.
But I should have done all that prior to. And yes. Here's why. This is why.
This
you know,
good,
you want to start while you're in the military, particularly for the service disabled veterans.
Yes.
You want to get that rating.
Yes.
And you want to get it under while you're still in, if you can, or at least start the process, because military people have priority over veterans.
Yes.
So once you separate and become a veteran, you're like all the rest of us civilians, you're nobody.
Yes.
You're not the military.
Right.
And so you don't get that same priority. Now, obviously, they're going to see you. But the point I'm making is that you're A1 while you're still in.
Yes.
People jump, they snap, especially if you're getting out. So that's the time to take advantage. You can go get set up for your disability rating. That way, when you get out, you can get your rating. Why that matters is that in order to become a certified service-disabled veteran-owned small business or a certified disabled veteran business enterprise, you have you to have that disability rating. You got to have that rating letter.
I'm so glad you said that. Man, I tell you what, I'm excited about this conversation. We're coming to a close of the show, but man, we're going to have you back. Listen, my audience, I'm telling you right now, because I know a lot of you guys, you're interested in this podcast. You want to get started. We're going to have Troy Small come back at least every 3 months. Okay, yes. I'm writing this in stone. You're going to be in this studio every 3 months, every quarter.
Yes.
We're going to sit down, and like this is the first of a series of walking you through as far as government contracts, but also focusing on people that are in active duty, prioritizing them to utilize their benefits so that when they get out, they hit the ground running. Now, how do my listeners get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me is through my website. That is copperwaterconsulting.com.
Okay.
You could also use troyasmall.com. It'll go to my website. But you can go there and submit an inquiry there to request a consultation.
Okay.
So we can have a one-on-one to discuss. You also can send me an email or connect with me on LinkedIn. But my email is troy@copperwaterconsulting.com.
Okay.
Or troy@troyasmall.com.
Okay, outstanding. And again, just for my sake, repeat that website one more time.
Copperwaterconsulting.com.
Outstanding.
One word.
It's one word.
C-O-P-P-E-R. That's copper.
Yes.
Consulting, C-O-N-S-U-L-T-I-N-G. .com, copperwaterconsulting.com. Did I not spell water?
Okay.
this will make them remember it.
Outstanding. And with that, you know what? Wow. I mean, this was an exciting episode. I am really glad that you came to the studio today, but I'm also glad for my audience to get this information. And I know that they're going to request more information. I'm glad that you're going to be a resource for closing the wealth gap. And with that said, Tyrone French is closing the wealth gap.
That's our show for this week. Closing the Wealth Gap. The one show, the only show that shows you how to take control of your financial future. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.